Alex, I believe I have reached the equivalent of nirvana.
Tell me more.
Well, I have been sleeping on my cozy earth sheets.
Wow.
And when I get up in the morning, I put on my fantastic jogger suit.
Yes.
Which is a funny way to put it, but you started saying that, so I'm just going to keep on going. And it is opening my mind to things I didn't know I could open my mind to.
Casey, all I have to say is, welcome to the other side.
It's incredible, Alex.
I've lived two lives. One of them is before Cozy Earth, and one is after.
Which is right now.
That's right. We're talking Cozy Earth. They make incredible, soft, lovely, temperature-controlled bedding and cozy wear.
Cozy Earth makes the best clothes I think I've ever touched, that have ever touched my skin.
Casey, I'm right there with you.
It's soft, it's breathable, it's temperature regulated, it looks good, it feels good, which makes it good.
And how about this for good? All of their products come with a 100-night sleep trial and a 10-year warranty. So if for some completely batshit reason you don't love these sheets, you can return them.
Now, Alex, right around the corner is Mother's Day. If you haven't already done something, which you should have,
yeah,
now's your moment. Go buy your mom some Cozy Earth, because it is the thing that will help her sleep at night. It's the thing that will help keep her comfortable at all moments of her life. And that's what you want for your mom.
So she isn't up all night thinking about what a disappointment her children are.
Exactly, because they didn't get her Cozy Earth. You don't want to be on that level.
Well, Casey, here's some exciting news. All Completely Arbitrary listeners get 35% off at CozyEarth.com with promo code TREES. Again, that's promo code TREES, T-R-E-E-S, for 35% off at Cozy Earth. So get yourself cozy. Get your mom cozy. Hell, get your dad cozy and your friends cozy.
Yeah, it doesn't have to stop there, you know?
Make the earth cozy with Cozy Earth.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
What's up, Fungal Associates? Happy 2024 and welcome to Completely Arbitrary, the podcast about trees and other related topics. I am Alex Croson. And of course, I'm here with KC Clapp.
Well, good new year, Alex.
Good new year, KC.
This is our first episode of the new year.
That's right. The year of our Lord, 2024.
Yes, that's right. And may we have blessings.
May we have blessings. KC, that's right. It's the new year.
Yep, it is. Do you have any goals this year, Alex?
Oh, I've got a few. I'm looking to release my first full-length record as a musical artist.
That's right. Now, full-length is what?
That's like 10 to 12 tracks.
10 to 12, okay.
An LP.
You have more than 12 tracks, is that like a double-decker length?
No, I think that is still considered a normal LP.
Okay.
I don't know what you could get up to. You know, it's like the definition of pornography. Like, I know it when I see it. I know a double LP when I see it.
Yeah, all right. That's
when I'm like,
good.
Whoa, 24 tracks. God damn.
Yeah, that is a distant. But then you look at half of them, they're like 30 seconds. And
exactly.
You're like,
okay, plenty of interludes.
Just put that onto another song. What are you doing?
So that's my big one, Casey.
That's a great goal. That's a good start.
Thanks. The other big one is, to sort of revamp my physical well-being, my physical health.
Yes. Yeah. You said this is going to be your championship year. I think you described it to me earlier.
Yes. I recently learned what a rebuilding year was in pro sports.
Which is so good.
something that you've probably known about since high school.
Yeah. It's fairly common parlance. Yeah.
So I think that the last couple of years have been my rebuilding years, and now I'm ready to go out and at least get in the final four.
Get in the playoffs. All right, I'm with you.
So what about you, Casey? Any big resolutions?
Ooh, you know, I don't do resolutions. I have always thought that I find them silly.
Okay.
I don't like the idea that someone is waiting to make a change in their life until New Year's.
Fair enough.
And then they're like, that's going to be the day. Yeah. I'm like, well, you're kind of just, it's a little disingenuous. If you really want to change, just change. My friend Zaz actually gave me this idea this year to come up with a word of the year and to kind of use that.
I've heard this.
Yes, my word. I've never done it before, so I chose growth this year.
Growth.
Yes.
All right.
So the idea would be that the podcast grows, that our little business here grows, and we can make sure to get more people listening and subscribed, dole out more stickers to all of you guys out there.
Yep.
But I'm also trying to write this book, so I really want to, that's going to be a big growth for me professionally, have this big written thing done. But then I also just want to grow as a person. I have goals that I'm trying to meet, and ideally I can at least get started towards those in different ways this year.
Can I tell you, a word of the year, I would say falls under the category of a resolution.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. But I'm not...
You're a bit of a resolution elitist.
Wow! Is that what you think of? That's it? Oh, you have a resolution? Pathetic.
I just think that the new year is a natural... It's the end of a cycle, right? It's like a natural time to look at your life and think, what could I do better?
Yeah, that's very fair.
I think you would not disagree with that.
I don't disagree. Yeah. I 100% agree with that.
Well, I think it's going to be a good year for you, Casey. Good growth year.
Yeah, thanks. I think you're going to make the championships this year.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, this is exciting.
Because I like the idea so much. Can I also have a word of the year?
Do you want to pick one now or you just want to tell us? Okay.
I already know it.
All right, what is it?
Intention.
Intention.
I want to be more intentional with everything.
I think it's very good.
Yep.
Well, we can start by being intentional today.
Wow.
In trying to make sure that everyone comes to our new premium service.
Wow, Casey. That's right.
Now, that's growth if I've ever seen it. Casey's becoming the lead here, transitioning segues.
Man.
Fabulous.
What a great job. That's right. ArbitraryPod.supercast.com is our new support platform. We are moving away from Patreon.
That's right.
And if you want to support the podcast, there has never been a better time. I'm not just saying that because it's old hat copy.
Yeah.
We have two plans there. We got the Tree Huggers and we got the Cone Club, of course. You can get monthly cones. Cone stickers, I should say.
Yes, technically we're not sending cones. That could become somewhat of a biohazard.
Of course, that's arbitrarypod.supercast.com.
That's right.
Go support the podcast, get cool benefits, and for the first time, we are offering ad-free listening.
That's right.
So if you are like me and commercials make you want to tear your brains out of your skull, you can now get ad-free listening of this show.
That's right. So what's going to happen in like 30 seconds is just going to be a continuation of the podcast for you.
And I, of course, yes, exactly. And if you're not supporting us, I, of course, encourage you to listen to the commercials, and they're great.
Because that's actually support, too.
And coupon code trees, by the way.
No matter what you do.
that's right, Casey. Yeah. Well, Casey, we got a fun tree to talk about today, the Oyamel.
That's right.
But we got to do so after a break. We will be right back with our first episode of 2024 here on Completely Arbitrary. Casey, you know our future is bright.
Yeah, it is, Alex.
But it's so bright, we got to wear shades.
What?
Casey and I are now putting on... our gooder glasses.
Oh, man. I can't see a damn thing.
Hey, they do the job, huh?
These things are great.
Casey, that's right. This episode is brought to you by Gooder.
That sure is right.
That is Goodr. They make fashionable sunnies.
They make fantastic sunglasses. Alex, I got a quick story. When they approached us, I said, I cannot tell you how excited I am about this. They saved me when I was riding my bike across Iowa in Ragbri last July.
Wow.
I couldn't see. I got hit in the eye. So one of my eyes from a week prior would not constrict. It was constantly dilated.
Oh my God.
So I had to wait till it like essentially refixed itself. I ended up needing to wear sunglasses on the entire drive and driving back over, but I had cheap gas station sunglasses.
Yeah.
It was $5 or something.
Yeah.
And they just did not do the job. I was absolutely in hell. And then stopped over at a shop that was there and then picked up a pair of sunglasses, and it said it was $25. And I was like, what? These are okay. I'll try them out. I just need a new pair.
Yeah.
All polarized. I put them on my face, and it was like the world had changed.
Oh.
I'm pretty sure I cried, Alex.
Casey,
like, I love these sunglasses.
I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. They saved me.
That's amazing, Casey. And they didn't save me yet.
Well, the time will come.
The day will come when I need these glasses and I have them. I do love these sunglasses, Casey. And I was telling you before we started recording, my problem with sunglasses is that I always either buy, like you said, a cheap gas station pair for $6, or I could debase myself by spending $200 on a pair of sunglasses at Nordstrom or some shit. I ain't doing that. Casey, Gooder are the perfect middle ground.
They sure are. Starting at $25, they're all 100% polarized. You can look into water and see through it.
Oh my God.
Which is incredible.
Is that true?
It is. They're polarized. Yeah.
Oh, well, these would be great for fishing, eh?
Exactly.
And they would be great for cycling, working out, golfing, going to the beach, hiking, or just walking around town.
Just doing anything. I rode my bike across Iowa with these sunglasses. People wear them while they are jogging. They stay on your face. They don't bounce. They are excellently made. I cannot recommend Gooder enough.
And Casey, they're pretty cool. In fact, you and I got a couple pairs.
Oh, yeah. What did you get?
Mine are called Hellhound Hallucinations.
Ooh, Alex, I got The Future is Void.
Amazing.
Now, for those of you who are unfamiliar, that's the name of our sunglasses.
Yes.
Not our new catchphrases for completely arbitrary.
Hey, man, you know what I say. Hellhound Hallucinations.
Yeah, he does say that.
And if you want to support this show and try a pair of Gooder, they are giving Completely Arbitrary listeners free shipping. You can go to gooder.com/trees. That's GOODR.com/trees and use code trees for free shipping. Gooder offers a 30-day money-back guarantee and 100% satisfaction. Again, that's gooder.com/trees and use code trees for free shipping. Huh. We'll see you in the future.
Which is void.
And bright.
Yeah, you look good. You look good.
Hey, let me ask you this. You ever taken a walk and just felt inspired? Maybe you discovered your new favorite restaurant or popped into the library and found a book that you really wanted to read, or you're like, hey, I think this car dealership used to be a Taco Bell. Well, there's a podcast about this kind of thing now with comedian and actor Alan McLeod, one of the funniest guys. It's called Walking About. It's a new podcast that treks into the simple joy of walking and its connections to health, history, creativity, and of course, community. In each episode, Alan invites a friend to share a little stroll and see where the sidewalk takes him. Alan McLeod has guests including Mike Mitchell, Spoon Man, Spoon Nation for Life. You got Colton Dunn. You got Janet Varney, Eva Anderson, Whitmer Thomas, Gabrus, Ed Begley Jr., Catherine Spears, Andy Richter, and of course, Burger Boy, Nick Weiger. Some of the funniest people. You know this podcast is going to be an absolute hoot. Maybe you could even listen to it while you're taking your walks. So lace up your podcasting shoes and listen to Walking About out now, wherever you get your pods. Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. Today we're talking the Oyamel.
Yes. Now, I notice, Alex, you said Oyamel.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it is Oyamel.
Say those again.
Oyamel.
Oyamel?
Yeah, imagine there's an I there.
Oyamel.
Oh, no, an I.
Oyamel.
Oyamel.
Like E-I-E-I-O.
O-E-mel. I think so, yeah. Yeah, yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Oyamel.
Okay.
Although, you can also just call it the sacred fir.
The sacred fir. Let me take a stab at this. AB's religiosa.
You got that.
Well, I read your notes. So
Well, okay.
It's a bit cheaty.
But I think that's a very good cheat. Just reading the notes. You know, it's like, what did you do to pass that test? I read my notes.
I read the material.
I was like, oh, dang, you got through the system.
Here's a life hack for you.
When someone tells you something, write it down.
If you're trying to remember it, read it later. Wow, interesting.
You're absolutely right, Alex.
Yes.
The religious fur is what it's called, or the I-mail or O-email. I constantly, as I'm sure people heard last month, pronounce things 100% incorrectly.
That's okay. Last month was outside of our comfort zone in terms of pronunciation stuff.
It's true. But the with this, I specifically was reading and I saw another spelling of it in, it was another old Latin term. So the Latin, as you said, abies religiosa. And if you go down, you can kind of read through some of the old names, and it has actually been called O-E-M-E-L with an I before. I've read this somewhere. And okay. So I was like, well, that'll be a nice, easy way for me to remember how to pronounce the Y that is in a Spanish pronunciation, but I know that depends on where you are, it sounds different.
Yeah.
Like within a certain country, it sounds different, right?
So region to region.
Yeah, exactly. So trying to avoid that.
Okay.
So O-E-M-E-L.
O-E-M-E-L.
That's what I believe it is.
Okay. Well, Casey, let's imagine, as we do every episode, that you and I are walking through a Mexican forest.
All right. Yeah.
And we come across what appears to be a column of monarch butterflies.
Wow. Really just spilling the beans right off the bat. Oh, my God.
Sorry.
Well, everyone, secret's out.
I don't have to go that direction.
That's fair.
Should we undo it?
No, you can. Let's stick with it.
Okay.
It's usually clear by the name, at least. So.
Sure.
I can tell you a little bit of background, though. Alex, you're right. Okay, hold on. You finish where you're going.
Thank you. Growth. And then we realize, hey, wait, that's not a column of butterflies. It's a tree. Casey, let's ID this tree.
Let's ID this tree, Alex. I want to give you a little bit of an idea of where we're at here.
Please.
So we are at high elevation in central Mexico.
All right.
And for some context, Mexico is one of the most diverse places on the planet.
Mm.
It's a very strange kind of ecosystem, or not? It's not even an ecosystem. It's a very strange eco place.
Eco region.
Yeah,
heard?
I think that's the right term.
Okay.
At least as close as we can get, because if you're in the very bottom of the country, you're right next to Guatemala. You are just a stone's throw away from the Amazon tropical rainforests.
Yeah.
The whole Central America. Fantastic, beautiful tropical forests.
Mm-hmm.
As you go further north and you get to the northern border of Mexico, it is the same kind of desert Southwest that you expect in Texas and Arizona, New Mexico,
sure.
California. That's it. Every place that has that border that you think of as a desert, that is the north.
Yeah.
So as you kind of go south, you also start to get giant mountains. So it has a ridiculous amount of gigantic mountains that then go from desert areas to like these sky islands with cloud forests at the very top.
Cloud forests, yes.
Yeah.
Cool.
Again, this is high elevation, like 69,000 to 13,500 feet. So it's a big, big like high up place. They grow up the same way that you'd expect any other fir tree. So when you think of Christmas tree,
yeah,
that's what they look like. All the fir trees that you've seen here looks just like that.
Yeah. What is that called again?
It is an excurrent growth form.
Excurrent.
Yeah.
Another thing I'll never ever remember.
I have literally gone back and forth trying to remember excurrent versus decurrent.
Yeah.
And there's one tree you'll recall, Calocetus decurrens, which has an excurrent growth form.
This is why people hate science.
I know. You're so right, dude. You're so right. So it is our species grows to about 130 to 190 feet. So they get really tall, like big trees growing at super high elevation. But of course, remember, as you go to lower latitudes, higher elevations maintain like their cool, more temperate kind of climate, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So at that high elevation, the mountains where they grow, it's essentially the same as growing up here in the north.
Okay.
To a certain extent, at
sure,
least.
Sure, yeah.
So they get really big, up to 7 feet in diameter, 2 meters.
Damn.
That same pyramidal excurrent growth form where it has that very, as it grows up, it gets smaller and smaller and it looks very much like a large triangle. The way I describe it is the way a kid grows or draws a tree.
Yeah, just a triangle with a stick.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
It's a classic conifer form, right?
Excurrent.
Exactly. But as you get closer, you'll notice that these are the standard barked fir trees that you've ever seen in your life. So they're young, or when they're young, they have little blisters on them of resin.
You can
poke and spits out at you?
We talked about that recently.
Yeah, we did.
Little pimple popping for kids.
Ugh, yeah, I hate when you describe it like that.
Before they're old enough to have pimples themselves.
This is just them getting practice.
Yes, yeah. This is nature's way of preparing them for puberty.
Send them out to the forest and get them used to it.
Yeah.
That's horrifying.
They come back with sticky hands.
I'm learning
shaking.
To be an adult.
It's like a rite of passage.
That's horrifying. Well, this is like that. However, as they get older, it becomes much more furrowed and kind of broken up into little plates, and it becomes a little bit more, not quite fire design, similar to like the white fur, but it's a little bit more just rough and tumble, I think is the best way to describe it. It's not going to blow you out of the water in terms of how rough and tumble it is, but...
Can I just say, looking at it, I just want to say, like, in this tone is intentional... It's fine.
It is. It's just fine.
It's fine.
It is. It's kind of like a very standard utility bark, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So as a utility barked tree, that's not going to be the exciting thing that you see about it. The thing that you will love about it are the adorable fur needles.
Yeah.
So these are the same kind of branches that you've ever expect. The twigs are generally a reddish purple. And they are puberulent.
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 I'm assuming that means that they have pubescence, like hair?
Yes, but it's very, very fine.
Okay.
So the UL, just like if you're talking about the petiole.
Yeah.
So petiole is the part of leaf that connects it to the twig. So you have leaf blade and it's connected by the petiole to the twig.
That's UL, petiole.
No, so a petiole. If you add an LU in there, that makes it that is essentially referring to the petiole of a leaflet connecting it to the rest of the leaflet.
Sure.
Or the leaf.
Yeah.
So it means it's a slightly smaller version of whatever it is. So pubescent would be normal sized hair.
Oh my God.
And then this is puberulent, which means it's even smaller pubescence. it's not quite pubescent.
That's so funny.
Isn't that just so good?
All right. So very fine hairs on the twigs.
Yes, very fine. It also has these, from those twigs come the leaves. And the leaves I really think are lovely because they are also a word we learned just nigh on 2 weeks ago, pectinate. Which means they look like tines of a comb going out.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
It's a very true fur thing to have foliage that looks like that.
I think that, I honestly think that term is sort of superfluous.
It kind of seems silly, doesn't it?
Like, yeah, they look, okay, yeah, it looks like a comb. Now what?
Yeah, okay, what else?
What does that mean to you? What does that mean for me?
It can help with identification sometimes.
I suppose. But then you have to remember another thing.
Yeah, you just think of it, I always think of two-ranked, because two-ranked means it grows left and grows right.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, or I guess it more or less just means you're growing in two distinct planes, whether or not it's exactly horizontally left and right.
Sure, okay, yeah.
But the moral of the story is, it is just another term that everyone's like, okay, thank you. I agree.
That's fine. Well, it's fine.
It's just fine.
Case, this is a conifer.
Yes.
And if my calculations are correct... next, we talk about cones.
It truly, yes. And I can tell you're like, leaves, I don't care. Tell me about that cone.
Yeah, I don't give a shit.
Well, they are green, and they have a central groove. That's it.
The cones?
No, the leaves.
Sorry.
I was just saying, it was like, as a side
a
note.
A little Casey Clapp prologue.
They got a little groove in them.
Okay.
It's the best. I think that's so much fun.
Like a little aqueduct down the middle?
Yeah, exactly.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, go look up the leaves. They're fine. But the cone, I'm excited about, because the cone is... another like upright cone. This is a similar thing to the fur, of course. Every true fur has an upright growing cone. That upright growing cone will fall apart scale by scale. They do not stay together over time. And this has exserted bracts.
What does that mean?
That means they come out beyond the scale.
Oh, okay.
Similar to the Douglas fir.
Douglas fir. Mm-hmm. And if a Douglas fir is a mouse butt, these are manta ray butts.
Yes, they're huge, right?
Yeah. They just look like a little curved manta ray behind with a little stinger tail.
I love that. That's exactly right. It's anything with a little behind and a little tail.
Yep.
I love it.
No comment.
No comment. Well, that is that's this tree, and they grow way up high in these groves, all throughout the it's a transvolcanic range that kind of goes across from east to west. kind of above Oaxaca, below, and then up to the northeast of Mexico City.
Groovy.
Just kind of goes whoosh, all the way through. And there's a bunch of active volcanoes in there. They just, you know, do volcano stuff.
Wow.
All the time.
Okay.
And this is, it's a tree that is not uncommon. If you are driving around, it's at the top of a lot of different mountains down there. It's kind of has a big range, but like I said, they have been doing the taxonomy of this for a long time.
Mm.
And there was a lot of, at certain times, different, like it was honestly just, I think, ignored for the longest time, where this is a lot of things that have happened in Mexico and a lot of South American countries politically. Often they have had something of a, they haven't been quite so stable.
Sure.
So scientists have not been investing their time down there. And there's local people who have been doing a lot of this, and a lot of Mexican dendrologists and foresters and scientists have been working really hard to figure out all the taxonomy. But over the last probably maybe 50 years or so, they have taken this one species, pulled it out, moved it around, found new species, pulled those into different varieties, and put them back into their own species. So it's been kind of a bit of a mess recently. And like I said, recently is like the last 50 years.
Okay.
But it is a fantastically interesting tree, because anytime you drive north or south or east or outside of Mexico City, you just kind of go up through mountains.
Yeah.
You'll start to go through a pine oak habitat. And then at the top of mountains, you'll go into the fir habitat. So very standard, same thing that you'd see in California, you'd see it in Texas and Arizona. You just keep moving up, and it goes from oak pine to a more fir-based forest. And
okay,
so far there's also some spruces down there too. So there's a continuity in terms of environment. But this is this particular tree and some particular groves that it grows in have recently been made a little bit famous, and I'm remiss to say that we're on the back end of its fame right now.
Oh, it's faded glory.
It's, yes, and I, so a little bit of a spoiler for all you out there. We were going to do this tree November, I think. I think it was going to be during Thanksgiving week.
Yes, and we decided to take a week off.
Exactly. We needed to take a week off. We had too many things going on.
Yep.
So we dealt with what we needed to deal with. Then I said, okay, we're going to put this after our series on
Miyazaki.
Yes. Thank you, our Triazaki series. So we put it here. In the meantime, Alex, I was watching a fantastic documentary and was hanging out with Carrie. Guess what the documentary was?
Planet Earth 3.
That's right. That's right, Alex. It was Planet Earth 3.
Casey didn't coach me on this. I just know because he's told me.
And watching, having a great time. Uh-huh. I think we were looking at seasonal forests or something like that. And then lo and behold, I was scooped. Mr. David Attenborough, if it is his real name.
In air quotes, Casey did.
Yes, thank you. Ended up talking about the story that I was very excited to talk about. And if I had got this out beforehand, if I didn't need to take that week off,
yeah,
I would have scooped David.
Casey Attenborough.
Well, the good news is this is called the Christmas tree. That's what they call it, the sacred tree.
By the way, Casey put David Attenborough's name in quotes because... Yeah. It's not David Attenborough. It's an AI made to sound like David Attenborough.
Yeah, that's probably accurate.
That uses language learning technology to mimic his voice. We're not far from that. I think that's actually
literally
happening in like Star Wars movies with Alec Guinness and shit.
Really?
Yeah.
No way.
It's pretty soulless.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I hate that. Yeah, well, anyway. These trees have plenty of soul.
Wow.
Now, I... got a little bit of a fun story for you.
All right.
It's going to be talking about not always this tree, but this tree is Abies religiosa.
Yes.
And it is called that because it looks like a Christmas tree.
Beautiful.
But it has also a really intense amount of religiosity, I guess, or spiritualism with it. But it's related to not Christmas, but the Day of the Dead.
Ah, el Día de los Muertos.
Exactly. Now, before we understand exactly why that's the case, we have to go back to spring.
Hmm.
Are you ready to go back to spring with me?
Fuck yeah, I am.
Yeah, Alex is like, yes, I'm ready. Well, how many clouds are out there today? Too many.
Drizzly day.
All right. Well, come with me to the fields of the Great Plains in the eastern United States. And there is a bunch of flowers out there that grow in spring, and they're called milkweeds. Have you heard of these?
I've heard of milkweed,
Asclepias.
Yeah. It's a little trendy, or has been a little trendy in the past couple of years, Casey.
And this is exactly why.
Yes.
So this is a species of plant that grows up, and it has these big, beautiful flowers that come out in the early mid-spring. And they grow these, they have these very intense leaves. Like when you see one and you know, like, oh, that's a milkweed, you'll be able to recognize it all the time.
Yeah.
They grow all over the place. There's something like 200 species across the world. Now, these are called milkweed, Alex. Are you familiar? Have you ever seen why?
I'm assuming they have a flower sap in their veins that's milky white.
Yeah, you're not too far off. It's just a latex. Because remember, latex is you know it, like latex gloves.
Uh-huh.
That is just the, it's a sap that comes from trees.
No kidding.
Yeah, that's what rubber is. It's the same thing.
From the rubber tree?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I had no fucking idea.
There you go. That's why.
How about
that? Once you dry it, and like, it's, I think technically speaking, it's a bunch of teeny tiny solids that are suspended in what is essentially water.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, so that's why it's called a latex.
So it gives it this milky white appearance.
Exactly, yeah. So that is what these plants have developed as a means of keeping off all other insects and species that would want to eat it. So it's essentially filled with neurotoxins.
Oh, wow.
So almost nothing eats these in the entire world, except for a very few small number of insects.
Mm.
Specifically, the caterpillars of the monarch butterfly.
The king of insects.
Exactly.
The caterpillars of such.
This is the caterpillars.
So not the monarch butterflies themselves, but the larval stage.
Yes.
Okay.
So the larval stage, the pupa, they are
pupa.
Obligates. Oh, you don't like that word? Wow, sorry, Alex, pupa. Sorry. It's just very derogatory. You're just a pupa.
Reminds me of Yupa, Lord Yupa from Nausicaa.
Yes, it does, yeah. Whoa.
What a cool guy.
Oh, wait, yeah, he was a cool one. He wasn't a bad guy, was he?
He was Gandalf. When he did that jumping,
that's right. Yeah.
He jumped from one plane to the next with two swords in his hand.
Yeah.
I literally cheered.
It's
true.
That's so rad.
It's like, yeah, go Yupa.
Well, this is, you're right, it is the monarch, it is the king, it's the queen, it is the butterfly champion, it's the regent. So yes, Alex, you're right, the pupa, let's say Lord Pupa, the Lord Pupa are obligates of these species. It doesn't need to be, I should say, genus, it's an obligate of milkweeds.
Obligate.
Yeah, that means it can only live off of eating milkweed.
It has an obligation.
Exactly.
Okay.
So it is not able to eat anything else, and if it is, it would be like maybe so minorly, and probably wouldn't be, it would hurt that insect in the end. It wouldn't be able to grow correctly, so it's just like wrong nutrition at this point.
Okay.
But they have learned, or I guess I should say, they have adapted and evolved the ability to not get poisoned by these toxins.
Wow.
That everything else, like, it's poisonous to humans, mammals, you name it.
Mm-hmm.
This insect, this one insect, as well as a few others, this is the big one though, it is able to take in and not only not die from eating the toxins, but it does something that only a few other insects and other species of animals can do, which is take the toxins of Asclepias.
I knew this.
And bring it into their own bodies. You knew this, Alex.
Well, I had a feeling.
What was the feeling? What gave you the hint?
That it's still alive, I guess.
That's a good hint. Good job. Good job.
You know, this surprises me though, Casey, because being a monarch, I would think that it would have a poison taster.
You
know,
would think
someone
so.
To test
yeah.
its food.
It turns out they just do it themselves.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
That's a monarch I can get behind.
That's how you get ahead.
Monarch of the people.
Yes, that's right. That's how you become a dynasty, okay?
That is exactly right. And they've been a dynasty for over 1 million years.
Wow, no kidding.
In fact, specifically, the rest of our story has been going on for 1 million years at the minimum.
Wow.
Which is fascinating, but we'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
So we're in springtime. These little pupa are eaten away, and they are not eaten by other insects because they take in these toxins, put it into their own body.
Mm.
And if a bird eats it, then that bird will either spit it up or it will soon die because it has the toxins in it.
Wow.
So the birds, other animals, quickly learn, aha, don't eat anything that looks like that.
Yeah.
They also don't eat the adult butterflies because they too are just chock full of these same toxins.
Wow, they keep it.
They do. They keep it.
Like microplastics.
Yes, it just maintains its way up into the thing. Yeah, yeah, actually, you're probably far more accurate with that statement.
Almost
than
literally, anything. Right?
Yeah, I think so. So that is this is half the reason. The reason I asked you earlier, why do you think that they are still poisonous? And you said because they're not dead.
Yeah.
That plays into also their color scheme. So they are bright orange.
Yes, orange and black.
Yeah, and you've heard of this with other insects, like this kind of hazard or this like warning coloration. If they're bright red, bright orange, like these scary colors. You've not heard of this?
I have not heard of this.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, I suppose I've heard like, you know, I've heard that with like snakes, I guess.
Yeah.
If it's a black, red snake that like, animals see the color red and it makes them afraid.
Yes.
Which is the reason that bulls, you know, when you're bullfighting, you use a red cape to anger the bull.
Yeah. I don't know if that's exactly the same.
You like, went so far with me on that.
Just keep saying yes until I'm
I think it's, I think it is similar at the least.
Probably.
We don't need to get into it. You don't need to fact check me here. Just agree.
All right. I agree. You're right. This is why when I see red, I get really mad.
Yes. You're an insect to me.
I am just an insect. Thank you.
So they have this color pattern to warn other animals.
Yes, exactly.
Hey, don't eat me. I'm full of microplastics. I'll fucking kill you.
Exactly. And they're like, okay, yeah, cool. Well, we're just going to avoid you.
Yeah.
Exactly. And in fact, it works so well that other species, they do what's called a Mullerian mimic. Have you ever heard of this?
No.
It's when you have a non-toxic species of insect or thing, other animal, copy the same patterns and colors as a poisonous insect.
Wow.
And then they don't get eaten because they are associated. So a bird would be flying around and they would look for an insect and they'd see a viceroy butterfly and they would say, oh, I'm not going to eat that. That thing is certainly poisonous. It turns out that the viceroy butterfly actually has a little bit of poison in it, so it still does taste bad.
Oops.
But there are a lot of different kind of things that do this, and there's a bunch of different kinds of mimicry out there. And so Mullerian is when they look that very specific way. So anyway, these species are very poisonous. So they are not eaten, and they are obligates to this one species of plant. Now, again, we're in spring, Alex.
Yeah.
Everything is beautiful. The butterflies are flitting around. As spring develops here in the North American North, then from basically the south up, we get weather changing. So everything starts to get warmer and the snow melts and all that kind of stuff. And it starts from the bottom and it goes north. As spring progresses, our butterfly heroes will continue to move up, and whenever the new kind of flush of Asclepias, of the milkweed, is coming out, they will then colonize all these new areas. So they essentially follow the spring up and out across the entire continent.
Wow.
The entire continent.
So they kind of they're kind of a nomadic species that follows the food.
Exactly. Okay. Only in this instance, only during spring and summer.
Sure.
So they will go up and they lay their new little babies, and they essentially during spring and summer are making new generations. So new generation is from the pupa through the chrysalis, the actual metamorphosis, becoming a butterfly, and then laying another egg and starting it over again.
Cool.
That would be one generation.
Okay.
So these, during the entire spring and summer, all of these insects are constantly doing this. So whenever there's a new kind of spring flush of milkweed, that is going to be where you're going to find these butterflies. They're going to find all these things. So a big thing, what you were talking about, it's kind of popular to talk about right now, milkweed.
Yes.
It's because people got rid of them. They just plowed over all this land.
The milkweed,
The milkweed, yeah. And they then turned it into corn, soybeans, whatever your crop is. Now it's a city, probably, these kinds
and
of things.
And if the milkweed is the only thing that these monarch butterflies eat, or rather the pupils, the pupas, the lord pupas eat. Hey, lord, monarch.
Oh, God, we're getting...
Did you do that on purpose?
There. No, I didn't.
Okay,
no,
well, there you go.
Wow, lord pupa. This is so much here.
then goodbye butterflies.
Exactly. So you got that totally right. So the butterflies are flitting around, having a great time. They're doing different generations. They're making babies. They're having the time of their life.
Good for them.
Now summer comes to an end, as it does every year. And these butterflies,
winter is coming, as they say.
As they say, and they are constantly aware of it.
Yeah.
As everything starts to get a little bit cooler, these butterflies start to turn, instead of north, they start to go south.
Okay.
Or southeast, depending on where they are. Essentially, all at once, these butterflies follow all the weather and start moving south in the giant migration.
Wow.
And this is what David Attenborough talked about a little bit, but you know what? He didn't get near as far into it as I think should have been necessary.
Well, he's a bit of a hack.
He's a bit of a hack. Thank you. I didn't want to say it, but now that you've said it, I have to agree. As these insects start to move south, you'll notice that they are doing what we call a migration. They're the only insect in the world that has a migration.
No kidding.
The only one.
How about that?
It is fascinating.
That's amazing.
And it's fascinating, Alex, and amazing, Alex, because of several different reasons to which I'm about to tell you.
Please.
They go from the entire space of North America, except for some that overwinter in South Florida, some overwinter in Southern California.
Okay.
Almost every, all the rest, literally hundreds of millions of butterflies will all move from the far reaches of Canada, North America, New England, the Great Basin, and they will start moving down, and they cross the border. They go over deserts. They go over mountains. They go from the entire North America all the way down to one of 12 groves of Abies religiosa trees northeast of Mexico City that the total space takes up 1 kilometer.
Holy shit. Like a kilometer squared?
Yes, exactly.
Oh my God, Casey.
That is as much as they do. So they are able to, I'm sorry, it's 4.5 million square kilometers is their entire breeding range, which is North America, north of Mexico.
And they end up in this 1 kilometer squared area.
Exactly.
That
is less than a square kilometer.
That is wild.
It is spread apart through different groves. There's about 12 or but less than a dozen. And there is, you can just draw a little circle around it and say, okay, there's one, there's two, there's three, there's four.
Wow.
And the locals here have known about this since time immemorial. It's actually very hard to miss if you are in that area. And there has been native peoples in that area for, you know, as long as there's been native peoples in North America.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these butterflies go down and find these trees. And I need to point out two things that we have discussed. But before that, I will end our story. They overwinter for 4 months, and they show up like clockwork on the Day of the Dead, right at the end of October, right at the very beginning of November.
God.
Every year.
Wow.
Isn't that wild? They stay for 4 months, and then on about the Ides of March, they start going north again.
What is the lifespan of a single monarch butterfly?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Alex. Their multiple generations are doing these flights. So there is evidence that one single monarch butterfly would hatch, go south, go back up, and then go back south again. But for the most part, this takes 3 to 5 generations throughout this entire cycle.
Oh, so you are, okay, oh my God. So if you start the cycle,
yes,
you're born in Kansas as a monarch butterfly.
Uh-huh.
You're eating, or a pupal stage.
Yep.
You're eating the milkweed, right?
You're doing great. You're having a lovely time.
Mm-hmm. Your great, 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 excuse me, starting over. Your great, 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 great grandchildren will... The next time your species comes to Kansas, those milkweed plants, those will be your great, 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 great grandchildren.
Very potentially.
That is amazing.
Yes. And the reason that it is like so amazing is for two reasons.
You're being very generous by saying potentially, by the way.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
that was such a mess.
No, I did. You did great, Alex. You did just great.
Do you know what I'm saying?
I do. But the reason I'm saying potentially is because it's kind of hard. It's not like, it's not a linear process because when one butterfly goes from Mexico up to Kansas, lays its eggs, it'll be doing that consistently throughout late spring and summer. It'll lay a bunch of eggs and have 1, 2, 3 new generations mm-hmm. in that one season.
Oh, okay.
And then potentially that one that's alive that lays all these eggs will not make it back. It'll just kind of die.
Of course, yeah.
But all of those babies could either continue to go north as the late summer progresses. They get all the way up to Canada. They lay eggs. They might die. And then those new eggs that they laid, then they will start going south. And then as they go south, all of the Asclepias are turning themselves off. They're going dormant because of low temperatures. So then they would keep moving south, and they essentially turn off their reproductive genes. They just go into a state called diapause.
Wow.
And they just don't become sexually active, I guess is the best way to do
yeah.
it, until everyone wakes up and is super randy
uh-huh.
on the like essentially the Ides of March, and then they're like, woo!
Let's do this.
What are y'all doing here? And then they have this giant like reproductive party is
wow.
what I'm gonna call it. And then they all start flying north.
On these trees.
Yeah. And so this area is known, like, again, it's known for about 50 years or so. They mm-hmm. found it in the late 70s, 80s. They being the Western scientists.
Sure.
Because there's one guy, it's one of these things where you're like, where are all these butterflies going?
Yeah.
They just disappear, then they always come back.
Yeah.
So people had to, A, realize, oh, they're doing a migration. Then they realize, oh, wait, they're doing a migration, but it takes multiple generations. So how do the butterflies know where to go?
Yeah.
And number two, how do they get there? How do they navigate?
Yeah.
Because they're not just going somewhere in Mexico to where it's warm.
They're going very specifically.
Very specifically.
Like extremely specifically.
Yes, like a pinpoint location.
Yes.
Like they are better at finding these exact groves than our satellite technology was 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Where they were like, well, it's within a kilometer spectrum.
Sure.
Now, of course, we can like pinpoint anything.
Uh-huh.
But they do it without the use of anything but their antennas, and wow. this they trying to figure out exactly how, because this is great what exactly these insects are doing. How they find their overwintering grounds every single year is unknown.
That's amazing.
We know generally how they navigate, but there are two main ideas. One is called like a map, a compass direction, where you essentially, it's true navigators and map navigators, I think. I'll describe it, and it'll be a little bit easier.
Okay.
So some species of animal that do some kind of migration, they know geographically where they are and where they're going, and they know the reference between the two.
Okay.
So they can basically walk north and they know where they're going. And when they walk back south, they know where they're going.
Okay.
Some birds do this. Even a lobster species or a shrimp or something does this. Like it is known. There
whales,
are others,
I think, migrate.
Well, they do migrate, but they may not be true navigators.
Okay.
Because there's others, like certain bird species, that just have like this mental, this sense that is essentially a magnetic map sense.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
then they just go towards that.
Okay. Yeah. So they don't really know where they're going, but they're just following the water.
Exactly.
What is that thing called?
The divining stick.
Yeah,
or something?
Yeah.
100%.
Okay.
So some will know, others, they just have it locked in.
Wow.
So they aren't really sure, but they know it has to do with the sun and how these insects are seeing the sun, either through their eyes or their antenna.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, okay, I see where the sun is, and they have it. It's called a clock adjusted meter, because what they do is they know where the sun is in the horizontal plane. So of course, it is going up and it's pointing to the south in the northern hemisphere. So when they see that the sun is directly towards them, they measure, it's called the azimuthal angle or degree.
Jesus Christ.
Which is like the horizontal level. I know.
Okay.
It's wild. I had to look up what this exactly meant. Like, and it's just like these hardcore physicists explaining like
wow.
the angle of the sun in the horizontal plane across the horizons. And so the sun, of course, as the spring continues, mm-hmm. right, the days get longer and longer. So they adjust their clock, these like internally, these insects adjust their clock so they continue the same direction, even though the sun is popping up at a different angle for a longer period of time throughout the year.
What the fuck?
I know.
This is not unlike trees.
Yeah, like they have a sense. Exactly. Yeah. You're totally right.
The deep red spectrum color or whatever.
But nobody knows. They know that they have models to say, we know that they use their antenna to do it.
Yeah.
But nobody knows the exact like biological mechanisms. Uh-huh. Like they've drawn up like these schematic designs and they've even made a model, and what they want to do next is design or put that model into a drone and see if the drone can use the same clues.
Oh my God.
And then find its way to a certain direction.
Stunning.
Yeah. So we don't know exactly how they do it. Like, I mean, in a very detailed way.
Sure. In the way that we know why animals do some things.
Yeah, exactly.
Where we're like, we know exactly what's going on here.
Yeah.
We kind of know. I mean, we can see what's happening with these butterflies.
Yeah. Now, here's the other thing. As soon as the winter is done, everything on that that initial kind of map is reversed.
Oh, wow.
It has something to do with the cool temperatures, which is just above freezing, but they all roost together so they stay a little bit warmer and the trees keep it just a little bit warmer.
Oh, my God.
And then they, for whatever reason, when they are doused in cold for 4 months, then everything is reversed and they do the exact same thing back up into the breeding ground.
They just hit the rewind button.
Yeah, exactly. And the last thing, Alex, I'm sorry. There is a coincidental development, and they're like, well, it's an interesting parallel that this is also all of those sensitive things follow the pattern of asclepsia to a T. So when the asclepsia plants start to do their biological processes of waking up in the springtime, the butterflies are also.
Wow.
And they just go whoop, 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 and they follow the plants as they open like clockwork.
It's very alien. I mean, all this shit sounds like science fiction.
It absolutely is. How do they know?
So, and they all land in Mexico on the Day of the Dead.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's
that
when they get
like
there.
Gives me chills to think about. That is very, very cool.
And the people down there, the Day of the Dead is ultimately a European festival. And I did some research
like
on this.
Spanish?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yeah. And some people are thinking that the Europeans, brought it, and there's already some kind of, native kind of indigenous people's holiday around the same thing. The Mayans had all sorts of things, but it's really, there's a lot of like nationalism that has also come with that, like from Mexico.
Oh yeah.
So it's the politics and the real like what came firstness of the Day of the Dead, like where exactly that come from. Everyone is, so far that I can read, are like, this is mostly just a little bit of a rebranding of a European tradition that is All Saints Day kind of thing. Well, and I'll let everyone else kind of come up with their own research and figure that out. Mm-hmm. I am just merely here to note that the people who have, for the most part, there are still indigenous practices, there's still indigenous people, they're still doing their thing, but a lot of Mexico has become very Catholic. So when all of these butterflies come in, the people in that area treat them as the souls of the dead,
of course,
returning.
How could you not?
They offer them food and candies and sweets, and they basically just have this like big event. And then when the butterflies leave, they do this other procession. They like march all this stuff back down.
Oh my God.
It gives me chills too.
It makes me want to cry.
It's so beautiful, isn't it?
So, so beautiful.
Can you not imagine being around these groves, Alex, and just like sitting here and like meditating while these literal hundreds of millions of butterflies are just around you all the time.
Now, wow. Oh my God. So, Casey, it's not like these butterflies are just coming to these forests and landing on any tree.
Okay.
Right?
No, they're coming to specific groves of this specific tree, the Oimel, and then leaving afterwards.
So,
and they do the same place, same time, every year, have for apparently something like a million years.
So why these trees? Is that part of the mystery?
It's part of the mystery.
Okay.
Nobody knows.
Oh my God.
Like everyone's like, well, they come down here. So the reason for the migration probably has a lot to do with just life cycle. You just got to stay alive, move south and you don't die. It also helps get rid of individuals that have a certain parasite in them.
Okay.
So this parasite will make them less fit. So then when they fly south, they're more likely to not make the trip.
Oh my God.
So it's almost like a, what do they call it? There's a certain term for it where essentially if you're weak, you're not going to be able to do the migration.
Sure.
So it culls the herd.
It's like a gauntlet.
Exactly. Yes.
Amazing.
And then when they go back out, only the best, most fittest, most least attached to their parasite are going to survive the journey.
You know,
So now it puts a little mark on these butterflies, right? All right. I know you hurt your knee, but we have to do the local marathon. And if you don't complete the marathon, you're going to get eaten by tigers.
We got to keep moving.
Yeah. Just got to keep doing it.
I kind of think that monarch butterflies have sort of like the perfect life.
You think so?
Yeah. I'm like, damn, this sounds pretty good.
I mean, it's a little Hunger Games-y, and then it's also like a little like beautiful and romantic all at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're like, you know, deified in a way, like,
yeah,
or glorified, you know, but through this human made religious holiday, and wow, they sort of have it going on.
Yeah, they do. Now, so David talked a little bit about this,
yeah,
but he didn't talk about the fact that about these trees. I don't even know if he said anything more than like these sacred firs or something like that.
Oh wow,
yeah, it was all butterflies. Exactly. And I was like, no, this is about the trees.
How about this is the official non-official compendium to that episode of Planet Earth.
We'll call this Planet Earth Tree.
Nice.
Yeah, Carrie came up with that. I have to give credit to it.
Well, Casey, that is just a beautiful tale.
Isn't that wild?
And unfortunately, we have to, you know, bring it all to a cone score. So
yeah, well, now we got to bring it down to just the number between 1 and 10. That's all we got.
And we're gonna do that after the break. We will be right back with our review of the Oyemel after this. Welcome back to Completely Arbitrary. That was our discussion of the Oyemel and the monarch butterfly and the beautiful migration thereof.
Migration.
Casey.
Alex Croson, what do we got today?
Oh, migration. Casey, it's time to give this tree a review. And this is how it works. We're going to give some final thoughts. I say we keep this brief.
I think it sounds great.
We're running a little long, and we've got an exciting game to get to, Casey.
Yes, we do. Let's make it happen.
Maybe we could give, you know what might be fun? Casey's leaving. Good ear, Case. Casey had to jiggle the handle of the toilet.
We're in a high-class place here, Alex.
Yeah.
Okay.
Here, what might be fun, Casey, to keep it short, but intentionally?
Yeah.
You're familiar with the book series, A Song of Ice and Fire.
I am, yes.
Based on the HBO show Game of Thrones.
Famously short and to the point.
Yes. Well, there are houses in these books, and they each have words. You know, what are they calling the slogan or whatever?
Yeah,
of your house.
We shall not sow. We do not sow.
Winter is coming, and so on,
et cetera.
What if we gave this tree House Oyemel words in the fashion of Game of Thrones?
Interesting.
Now this will have to be really intentional. Maybe we could do both. Give me a little tweet version and the house words and then a rating.
All right.
Is that too convoluted?
No, I don't think so. I think it's good. Okay.
And then we're gonna give it a score of 0 to 10 golden cones of honor. Hell, you could even, for this episode, I'm in such a good mood with these insects. I'm thinking golden monarch butterflies of honor.
Golden wings of honor.
Golden monarch wings of honor.
I love this.
Casey, as our resident expert, we'll begin with you.
I think this tree has to get credit for the butterflies going to it.
Absolutely.
We don't know exactly why. But of all the trees of all the world, the butterflies have chosen these. I think there's got to be something to that. What it is, I don't know, but I'm giving credit to these trees for just that.
Mm-hmm.
They are spectacular. The insects know. The butterflies, they know what this tree has. I don't think we do. So, starting off with that, I think that's what sets these trees apart. I think there's fir trees you can get across the world, as we noted, some 50 different species, But I think these ones are special, and yeah. I think that is worth noting because I'm just taking my cues from the Butterflues.
Nice.
Was that a tweet? I'm gonna stick with that as my tweet version.
Perfect. And then your house words.
My for house words. Email. Sheathed in gold.
Nice.
I'll say.
Beautiful, Casey. And your cone rating?
I'm going to give these a 9.0.
Yeah, baby.
I think that they're just spectacular.
That's and what I'm talking about.
Apparently, you can plant them here in Oregon.
Is that so?
Yeah. They can take cold temperatures, and I just have never seen them. Like, they apparently grow over in Europe, like in Kew Gardens and all these things.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm like, where are these trees? Why haven't I seen one?
Yeah, how fun.
I bet you there are a few down in Hoyt, because Hoyt has a giant amount of fir trees, but I have yet to see these ones in particular, so...
I think I would like to see one, but I honestly think that I would see it and be like, oh, okay.
Yeah, it would. I mean, if it's not sheathed in gold, what's the point?
Sheathed in gold is perfect, Case.
Oh, thanks. Thank you.
Although I will say it is a bit more of an orange color.
Oh, wow. Okay, great. Really, really well done.
I mean, no, it's perfect.
What do you think?
Sheathed in orange. There's a little less of a ring to it.
You don't think so? You don't think that's good? Doesn't strike fear in the hearts of everyone?
All right. 9.0 golden monarch wings right. of honor.
That's what I think.
Wonderful. Big fan. I am of this tree.
Mm.
Big fan. I am of this tree.
I know, it's like interesting, interesting start here.
You know, I'm not in terms of fir might be one of my least favorite genre.
Really?
I'm just not an ABs guy, and it's taken me a long time to realize this, but I just don't care about them.
All right, that's fair. That's okay.
However, even you know, I'm also not a fan of sports, but there are the odd athlete who I'm like, man, I love that guy. This is one of those furs where I'm like, hey, you know what? Even me, the fur skeptic. Can look at this thing and be like, there's something special going on here.
Okay, that's fair.
You know, you've called me an aesthete.
Yes, yeah.
I don't give two shits for how this thing looks. I don't care about that at all.
Doesn't get you there.
But the fact that it is very intentionally a place where these monarch butterflies roost for the winter, and not just any trees, but these trees.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a little spooky. That's like real deal spiritual to me.
Yeah, it's got to be.
And of course, if you are a person living in these places natively, you see these butterflies on the Day of the Dead.
Yeah.
You see them like in droves. The sky turns gold.
Yeah.
Not orange.
Thank you.
And these trees become these columns of, you know, like, oh my God.
Yeah.
How could you not come to a conclusion that the two are related?
It's a spectacle beyond comprehension.
And not only is it like a cool nature thing, but it's like so meaningful.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And for that reason, well, my house words are,
I was going to say.
The spirits live here.
Whoa! That's great. I don't know which one I like better.
9.5 Golden Monarch Wings of Honor.
9.5. Oh my God, that's our first over niner in months, weeks. We've done so many divisive trees, Alex, where we couldn't decide, where we were, I guess
yes.
You and I were divided.
Yeah, totally.
I see. Wow, good for us, we did it.
But no longer on the first tree of the year. How about that?
Yeah. What do you mean? Good for us. Good for the tree.
Good for the tree. It's about them.
It is. It's about the tree. Let's not make this about us.
Casey, because we both rated this tree a 9.0 or higher, it has been inducted into the Golden Arboretum of Honor. And hey, what tree could deserve it more?
What tree could deserve it more?
Casey, with that, I play the conduction theme. You know, here I am at the ripe old age of 35. And one thing that has become really important to me just over the last couple of years is privacy. Besides what I tell you here on the podcast, I basically don't
want anyone to know anything about me unless I choose to tell them. And one way I up my privacy game is with NordVPN. Now, if you are like me and didn't know what a VPN was until a couple of weeks ago, let me tell you, a VPN is a virtual private network. And I said to myself, well, sure, that sounds cool, but I really don't know what it is or does. And then the moment I turned it on, I said, ah, I get it now. A VPN changes your IP address, hides your virtual location, and encrypts your connection, which allows you to increase your privacy online. How many times per day do you get scam calls or spam email because your data got leaked somehow? I also get emails from companies saying, hey, I see you bought something with us recently. Unfortunately, we got hacked and your data is now being used to harm you. With a VPN, you do not have to worry about any of this. It secures you when you're using public Wi-Fi. It stops marketers and internet service providers from tracking and collecting your browsing history and your messages and lots of other private data. And you can change your location to any of hundreds of countries, unlocking the power of, I don't know, say, British Netflix. I didn't know how important it was until I started using one. That's the truth. So if you just want to check out the features and see if it's right for you, I bet there's something about a VPN that will surprise you. So get started with NordVPN at nordvpn.com/trees. That's nordvpn.com/trees. It's risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and the link is in the description. Now go get secure.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Congratulations, yes! OEML.
Congratulations. What an exciting day. It turned out so great.
It's turning out to be a really good one, Casey.
Yes.
And let's keep the good times rolling with a segment. It's time for a game.
Here we go. Okay, what's this game today, Alex?
Casey, this one is called the Slang Game.
Oh, all right.
And here is how it works.
What do we got today?
I have slang from Mexico.
Mexican slang. All right.
And you and I are going to go through a few of these and come up with what, you know, we don't know these words.
Yes, correct.
We are not Mexican.
Nope, nor do I speak Spanish.
Correct. And we are going to imagine what these might be if they were arboreal terms.
Yes, exactly.
This could be like professional arborism.
Uh-huh.
This could be, you know, dendrological
yes.
terms. This could be any tree term, any tree related mm-hmm. thing. Mm-hmm. And then I will tell you what the word actually means.
All right.
And we encourage you to play at home. Play along at home. Casey.
Alex, what is our first word?
Our first word is one that I actually know.
Oh, well, that's going to be different.
Well, I'll suspend my disbelief and I'll pretend that I don't.
Thanks, Alex.
And I'll sell it to myself, you know. This one is Cheeto.
A Cheeto.
And no, we're not talking about a cheesy corn snack with a cheetah for a mascot.
Okay, which is what I was expecting.
This is Chido, Cheeto.
Okay. Cheeto.
What does Cheeto sound like to you if it were a tree term?
If it's a tree term, I feel like it would be the like warty bumps on the outside of a bark.
Oh, well, nice. Like,
oh yeah, there's that one. Oh, it's covered in Cheetos.
Yes.
That's
okay.
That's what I would think.
Cheeto is like a singular bump.
Yeah. Okay. So like you would say, oh, it's Cheeto ate. would be describing some kind of bark.
Cheeto
eight. That bark has Cheeto. Is Cheeto eight? It has Cheetos. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, that's the okay, first great. Thing that comes to my mind.
Okay, cool. Cheeto.
If you didn't know what it meant, what would it mean?
I think it would be Cheeto. Maybe like a type of epiphyte or something.
Oh, that thing's covered in Cheetos. Look at that. It's beautiful.
Yeah, and I might even say Cheeto is plural.
Yeah.
Like, look at all those Cheetos.
Oh, I see. You know. So a cheat would be just a singular one.
Sure, yeah. It has Cheeto. I mean, that just means it's like covered in these, lacy mosses.
Wow, that's beautiful. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I like that.
Well, Casey, very appropriately, Cheeto means cool.
Really? That's it? Just means cool?
Yeah.
All right,
yeah,
great.
Cheeto.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. See, that's what I have to remember. Like, that some of these words... they are not a thing. They're more like a definite, like, what is it? I don't know what the language is that I'm thinking. It's more of a descriptor than a noun. So it's more of an adjective than a noun.
Sure, yeah.
Like that. I don't know.
Sometimes we're kind of playing with language here,
Case. We really are. That's what we're trying to do.
Okay, Casey, you ready for your next one?
I'm ready.
This is Ruco.
Ruco.
R-U-C-O. Ruco.
R-U-C-O. Ruco. Okay, can you use it in a sentence? I'm just kidding. Don't do that. That'll ruin the whole thing.
I'll use it in a sentence. Casey, what do you think Ruco would be?
That's a very good sentence, Alex. Thank you. Okay, so Ruco, I would say, could be... It sounds more like a thing that you're doing, you know?
Oh, like, interesting.
Oh, we put this into Ruco, you know? So maybe it's like a protected grove of trees.
Oh, interesting.
You know what I mean?
Okay. Can I piggyback on that and say I agree with you? And how about it's an acronym, like all caps, RUCO.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
This is a RUCO protected site.
Mm-hmm.
And it stands for?
Rich Infested.
That's RICO.
dang it. No. Yeah, you're right. I did an I rather than a U. RUCO. Rich Undisturbed.
Mm. Conifer.
Aria.
Perfect.
Swish. Well, we just had a swoosh.
Well, a Ruco is an old person, Casey.
Oh, is it? Okay, okay.
What's up, Ruco? I think it's like geezer, like kind of derogatory.
Yeah. Okay, a little derogatory. I was going to say, yeah. Okay. Cool, Ruco.
Yeah, Ruco.
All right. Well, yeah, okay. Maybe it's just it's an old grove. It's a protected grove because it's old.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Okay.
Right. Yeah, so we can
melding
we can
the two definitions
together.
There.
Yeah. Nice. Okay.
Love
cool.
It.
Ruco.
All right. Ready for your next one, Case?
I'm ready, Alex. Let's do it.
Tocayo.
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 T O C A Y O. Tocayo.
Okay.
Tocayo.
Okay.
I think that tocayo is like a species.
Ooh, I
think
see.
It's like there's a grove of tocayo and some Douglas fir.
Yeah.
And some. I think tocayo might be like kind of a scraggly hedge tree.
Hmm.
In the vein of a hawthorn.
Yeah, okay, I can see that. It's almost like a scrub kind of thing, like a almost like a chaparral kind of tree.
Sure, yeah.
Okay.
Tocayo.
Tocayo. I like that. I think that sounds really good. It seems to me to be I guess a broad kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where it's not just like, oh, there is a single tree that is a tocayo.
Okay, yeah. Oh, so using it as a descriptor for hedge, scrubby hedge stuff.
Yeah. So it would be more of a broad descriptor than a specific one.
I got you, yeah.
Yeah, all right. But I like yours. I think I'd piggyback off that and say, yeah, there's a bunch of tocayo over there. So go around.
Yeah, totally. Don't get drunk at the bar and run your truck into that tocayo.
Yeah, seriously. Be careful. Get drunk at the bar and run your truck down the road
home to your wife. Tocayo is, this is really funny, I love this, it's someone who shares your first name.
Tocayo.
So another guy named Casey would be your tocayo.
Oh, that is so good, man. I love when other languages have like such specific particular things.
It's so specific.
That's good. Okay,
well, another one here, Casey. Mm-hmm, I like this one a lot. Chaffa.
Chaffa.
Yeah.
Oh,
that. C-H-A-F-A. Chaffa.
Ooh, I kind of feel like that would be the first thing that jumps out is like kind of something that's left over, you know?
Oh yeah.
Like maybe you carve a tree or you cut into it and like kind of like the sawdust is left over.
Totally.
The little bits and parts, you know?
Yeah. Some dry. I also imagine the chaffa, like dried detritus or like dry needles, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's just kind of like the leftover stuff once you cut down a tree and you just have like little bits and parts.
That's
a bunch of chaffa out there. Just get that, break that up, would you?
You need to call the chaffa cleanup crew.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, which we got them. It's a whole career.
So chaffa, Casey, is something that's low quality or prone to causing frustration. Ooh. My car is so chaffa.
I see. Yeah.
I think it might be an adjective, not a noun.
So it's a chaffa thing.
Yeah.
Like broken down.
Yeah.
Or like, gotcha.
This thing is constantly fucking breaking. It's chaffa.
I see. Okay.
Pissing me off.
Wow. All right.
Casey, let's do one more here.
Okay. What do we got? What's this last one?
Vocho. V-O-C-H-O.
Vocho.
Vocho.
All right. First thing that comes to my mind, that is a descriptor of a person. And I think it's a descriptor of a person who is like a Lorax figure.
Oh, wow.
He's a vocho. And like, they don't necessarily like live in the tree. It's not like a, you know, it's a real person.
Uh-huh.
They're just like connected to it. We'd maybe say like a naturalist or maybe like a mountain man kind of thing. Like, oh, there's a vocho over there. And it's like, that vocho is someone who's constantly just in touch. Go ask them if you have a question about this or that.
I like to also think of it piggybacking. Of like, they kind of have to earn it. You don't just like throw around that term.
Yeah.
That's like a term of honor.
Yeah.
Like, they're not a vocho until they're fucking Paul Stamets.
Yeah, exactly. It's like until you're at that level, you've got the renown.
And then you're vocho material.
Yeah. Hey, I like that. I think that sounds great.
Well, how about this, Casey? Vocho is short for Volkswagen Beetle.
No, you're serious.
A very popular car in Mexico.
Oh, get out of here.
It's true.
Just a vocho.
Yep.
Dang it. Well, that doesn't really fly.
Hey, in more ways than one, right?
Yeah, right? That's a very good point.
That was the slang game.
Oh, Mexican slang gang.
We hope you enjoyed it.
I like that game.
Casey, it's time for our completely arbitrary AMA.
Oh, yeah. What do we got this week? And how do you get on this AMA?
Well, you got to join our completely arbitrary Tremium. It's our new support platform. You can find that at arbitrarypod.supercast.com.
That's right. You can also get on Instagram, click through those links. If you're on any of our emails or our website, we also got it there. It's all set up. Gives you access to all sorts of cool things.
Casey, This week's question is from Marissa.
Hello, Marissa. And how's your day?
I love the pod and have been having a lovely time listening while I go on nature walks to identify trees and their cones near my house.
Great job.
I was wondering, Casey.
Yes.
As the resident tree climber,
okay.
Do you have any tree climbing tips you can share?
Ooh.
I used to climb trees all the time as a kid, and I miss it very much. How do you get up in a tree without being a flexible 60-pound child or bringing a stepladder wherever you go? And where do you go to climb trees without people looking at you funny? Thanks, Marissa.
Oh, that's such a fun question.
I feel like you can't avoid the last one.
Yeah, you pretty much, unless you're doing it like in a national forest area or something like that where you can just like, get away from everyone.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Honestly, so I think a lot of people are worried about people climbing their trees like on public land. So like in a city park or something, it's not couth to climb a tree. It's uncouth.
Sure.
A lot of that is like, there are ordinances in the city of Portland, for example, that basically say, we don't want you to damage the tree. So we don't want you climbing the tree. Also, we don't want you to fall out of the tree.
Yeah.
Then sue us for falling out of our tree.
Totally. That makes sense.
There's rules against it, but you can, climbing trees now, as I do today, is not the way that people are usually thinking about it. So arborists are very well and specifically trained to climb trees using ropes and other safety tools to make sure that you're not going to fall out of the tree.
Mm.
So there are certain harnesses, certain kinds of ropes, lanyards. Like, it's a whole specified industry with requirements on safety and best practices, you name it. So that is kind of how I climb a tree, rather than as we used to as children, where we just scampered up trees, you know? Everyone used to do that. It wasn't a big deal, but in today's kind of modern world of safety, before it'd be like, yeah, whatever, let them do whatever, you know, and yeah, no one really cared that much. Still to this day, I don't think kids should be climbing trees. Our confidence as children is extremely high, even though we don't necessarily know the risk that we're taking.
We lack a perception of danger and death.
Yeah, exactly. However, I do think that there's no reason to say, hey, kids cannot climb trees. Like, they should be able to climb trees. Just maybe keep an eye on them. And don't let them go too high.
A nice short tree.
Yeah, a nice little short little baby tree.
Yeah.
Because the bigger they get, the bigger they are, and you're more likely to climb on branches that are too big for your hands. So on little branches where you can grasp your hands around it, you can scamper up really quickly. But on big trees where you're like, now you're kind of arcing your arm over the top of like a smooth dome, like 1 foot diameter thing.
Yeah.
It's a little less safe. So the how I climb trees is I have a harness on. It's connected to a static rope, not a dynamic rope, which is the kind that you'd expect in rock climbing.
Okay.
And essentially that is in rock climbing, the ropes are a safety mechanism for when you fall. The ropes in tree climbing are a safety mechanism for if you fall, not when you fall.
Okay.
They're also essentially a fifth limb. So if I'm going to be cutting trees, I am leaning off away from my tie-in points or wherever I am to do some amount of work. So I need that to be tight. I don't want it to be like slowly stretching all the time. It's something that I'm using as a part of my working, not strictly as a backup in case I can't make this next grab. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then that also comes with a lanyard, or rather your whole kit should. And a lanyard is just a smaller rope that you can clip on both sides. So you can whip it around something, quickly clip it in, and now you're tied in two ways.
Oh, wow.
That's one little lanyard rope around a local branch, and then your initial tie-in point that's way higher. So that goes to my second question. How do you do it as a non-tiny little child? Use ropes. That's really the trick. And you can use one rope and one harness. You climb up. You just have to know all the right knots and how to set them up. Mm-hmm. For that, you need some specialized training. You have to know how to tie a bowline. You have to know how to tie yourself in, because there's a couple different knots you can do for that. And you'll have to know how to make a hitch, which is just your climbing mechanism. So it's like a hitch of the rope that goes around the rope. So you make this kind of loop where you have the tail end of the rope, and then it goes up over the top of a branch. It goes back down to your harness. Then you tie yourself into the harness. Then you use the tail end and you make this other knot that's called a hitch, a climbing hitch, and you use that to climb up. So it's one of those things where if you push it upwards, it loosens. But then when you tighten it and pull down, it tightens itself.
So that if you fall,
yes,
it tightens.
And it holds
on to you.
Exactly.
Oh.
Yeah. So that is the classic, they call it the double rope system, or the double rope technique.
Cool.
And it's essentially rope goes up, goes down, makes this fun loop, and then you just have to make yourself a smaller loop as you go up. It's not very efficient. It's very like, this is how you initially learn, and it's how you work a lot of times in the tree, but also people today are using what's called the single rope technique, where rope goes up and then goes back down to you. You don't make this other loop with the rope, and then you just climb straight up the end of that rope.
Wow.
Yeah. So that is how I would recommend doing it. Alex is kind of blindsided, or like blurred.
Here's my recommendation. Don't.
Just stop.
Yeah. Thank you, Marissa, so much for your question.
Yeah, great one.
If you've got a question for us, join up on the completely arbitrary Tremium, our new support platform. Mm-hmm. That's arbitrarypod.supercast.com. Click over to that AMA section and ask yourself a tree-related question. How about that, Case?
Yeah. In fact, we're going to be posting our first one, our call for questions, this month, probably in the next week or so.
That's right.
So AMA on the new platform is essentially the same as the old, except better designed. And you will be able to click right to your time-stamped answer.
Yes.
If you so choose, rather than listening to the whole thing, which you can do through your own ad-free feed. You don't even need to go to a different app. There's so many benefits, Alex.
So very exciting, Casey. And with that, Casey Clapp.
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much for this exciting discussion.
Thank you, Alex, also for this exciting discussion.
Very touching, this whole monarch butterfly thing. And also, you know, monarch butterfly, very linked to, I mean, at this point in my knowing, very linked to religion and sort of afterlife. And,
yeah, yeah.
And then you look at a monarch butterfly and it straight up has stained glass wings.
It's beautiful. Now, be careful you're not looking at a viceroy. They look just like them.
Well, I would never.
And with that, we say, we'll see you next week. Happy 2024, everybody. And thank you so much for listening to this episode of Completely Arbitrary. We'll see you next time. Goodbye.
Catch you later. Completely Arbitrary is produced by Alex Croson and Casey Clapp.
Our artwork is by Jillian Barthold, and our music is by Aves and the Mini Vandals.
And you can support the podcast at patreon.com/arbitrarypod.
And find additional readings at completelyarbitrary.com. Thanks for listening.